Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Baskin and Phelps. Start things off on the Mercedes-Benz of Bedford Hotline. Talk a little bit of Cavaliers basketball, NBA in general. Steve Ashburner, of course, for NBA.com, senior writer, and has been on the show before. Always a pleasure to have him on. If you want to hit him up on Twitter, Ash NBA, A-S-C-H-N-B-A. Sorry, at A-S-C-H-N-B-A. Steve, I'm a mess today, sorry. They call me Hurricane for a reason.
Good thing you didn't try my whole name. the German C in there somehow messes everything up, both in pronouncing and in spelling. So
it's all good. It's all good.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, let's talk about the Cavs for a second. What's your take on where they are right now? And, you know, Jeff and I have both done national shows where everyone's talking about the Cavs just being a mess, and I think Jeff and I are both kind of, hang on, let's see, it's January. Where are you with the Cavs right now?
Yeah, you know, there is a tendency toward herd mentality on this sort of stuff, and when you have a highly anticipated and watched game like we had Monday, you know, it is tempting to, you know, make some sweeping pronouncements. I feel like I've gotten to the point of making one of my own, but I also know you have to temper it with, you know, an understanding of the history of it. I heading into Monday, I thought, well, you know, we've seen this before from the Cavaliers. We've seen this from LeBron teams. And some of the malaise is earned because, you know, they know what's important. What's important is the postseason. And so you survive and navigate the first 82 games. He did that eventually in Miami, and he's done it in Cleveland. And so I'm not that thrown by it, but, you know, watching that game Monday, you know, it struck me a little bit that while the Cavaliers might be able to rally and sort of find themselves and not, you know, not sweat where they are right now in January by the time we get to April, are they more capable of beating Golden State as Golden State's configured now, or equally capable as they were, you know, in 2016, or less capable? And I wonder if maybe they're a little less capable. So, you know, that's a credit to the Warriors and their continuous improvement and the things that they've done. And it's also a concern, you know, about the Cavaliers. So, you know, I wonder whether there's enough, I don't know. It's almost, obviously the defense is in need of fixing, you know, for various reasons. And energy and effort are not to be discounted, I don't think. I think that that's part of it. I wonder about the crew, the new faces that the Cavs have, just in terms of they're mostly veteran guys. You don't have sort of that unbridled enthusiasm you get with young players. They, you know, I know they've looked to inject some youth over the course of this season at various points, but it's mostly a bunch of guys that have been there, done that, or, you know, think they know what it takes to do that. And I wonder whether that's going to sort of stick some, you know, jumper cables on this team.
Steve, Jeff Phelps here. Good to have you with us.
Hi, Jeff.
As folks have looked at this team, I think it's the deepest team that LeBron's played on since he's been back, and an interesting collection of talent. We've had other folks say it's the worst team LeBron's played on since he's been back in Cleveland. Where do you stand on that? What do you think of the makeup of this roster?
Well, they've got a lot of talent. They've got a lot of, you know, strong resumes. You know, getting the most out of those guys, and if they have everything that they need, I think they still need, you know, they need rim protection. They need, you know, somebody inside, a factor inside. And, you know, I've seen it suggested that their best rim protector is LeBron himself. You know, but the idea that he's going to log his minutes as a center defensively, you know, it just seems like you can't keep going to the well and asking him to do more and more and more. You know, so that's I don't know that that's a realistic solution, any solution at all. You know, they could use a big guy or somebody that can, you know, really challenge entry into the paint. So they don't have that. Yeah, they're very talented, and they've got veteran guys. But, you know, again, we look for, you know, do they all complement each other, or is it sort of a series of, okay, yeah, that guy is better than the seventh man they had before or the eighth man they had before. Do they function as a whole, and do they really keep pressure on an opponent? It seems like on Monday night, for instance, as they tried to stay up with Golden State in the fourth quarter, there was a little bit of turn-taking. And you know, I understand they've got to get Isaiah Thomas fully functional. And so that's a big adjustment for, you know, any team at that position in the middle of a season. So, you know, that could happen. And I got to figure that the Cavs, and particularly LeBron, would be resourceful enough to sort of understand and find the best ways to use Thomas in, you know, their offense. Using him in their defense basically means covering for him. But, you know, I respect the guys on their roster. It's just how they all work together and what they all bring to the table, you know, night in, night out, as opposed to, okay, tonight, you know, it's this guy's night. Steve, Wednesday, it's that guy's.
But Steve, what are you hearing about the Cavs and maybe some potential moves coming up here? The latest was Derek Favors, people talking about that, maybe perhaps with Tristan Thompson to Utah. Are you hearing anything about the Cavs and what they might be willing to part with, especially with the draft pick from the Nets?
And do they need it?
Yeah.
Yeah, all I hear about the draft pick is that they are loath to give that up. That remains an insurance policy for LeBron's departure, as much as it is anything to enhance the team on the short term, you know, because they just don't know what he'll do. They could make a move, bring in a guy who's nearing the end of his contract, and then end up with neither LeBron nor the guy that they brought in. You know, while that draft pick becomes a really helpful piece wherever it ends up in terms of a player for years to come, you know, at an affordable contract. So, you know, those are some of the realities of the situation. If there's a helpful piece that they can add and really count not just on that guy, but LeBron too, you know, for making that work for more than just, you know, a couple of months, then, you know, that gets done. But, you know, I guess what you threw out there. I didn't know much about Favors for any deal that would include Thompson, only from the standpoint that, you know, I'm based in Chicago, and all the talk here is Favors for Mirotić, and you know, that sort of, I guess, got quieted down over the last day or two, but we'll see. Everything can rear up. But I don't know. I know, you know, Favors, he's not the rim protector in Utah in ideal circumstances. That's Rudy Gobert. So, you know, on the other hand, he does seem most comfortable, you know, sticking in the paint, close to the paint. So, but is that an improvement, or is that kind of a push if you had Tristan Thompson playing the way that he has played before for this team in postseason runs?
Steve, you think this team needs to make a trade? If you were Kobe Altman, would you be looking to make a deal, or would you want your improvement coming from within?
I want it coming from within. I really think that, you know, the idea that the answer is out there somewhere, I mean, that seems a little, you know, not even committed to the task. I mean, I saw a quote from Patty Mills this morning saying, you know, we've got everything we need in San Antonio to win a championship. And I'd like to hear that coming out of, you know, Independence, Ohio, that, you know, they're going to spend the time in the gym to make this happen. And I think based on what you said about the roster depth, that ought to be doable. So, you know, but it's not going to happen unless you actually believe it. And so that really is going to come down to, you know, does LeBron think that he needs, you know, somebody else, as we've seen in the past, or are they, you know, or do they think that they can get it done with what they have? I mean, if they doubt the return they got from Boston for Kyrie, or if they just think that, you know, there's something greener on another roster somewhere, you know, then you almost have to do it. It's self-defining, because, you know, then you're not going to have the confidence you need to pull it together. I just remember when this Cleveland run started, I mean, I saw LeBron take Matthew Dellavedova and Tristan Thompson and get to, you know, six games in the finals with, you know, an understaffed team. I mean, Golden State's a better team now, no doubt about it. But when the Cavaliers sort of circled the wagons with Love getting hurt against Boston and Kyrie, you know, being gimpy up until the point he was out in the finals, you know, that was a pretty formidable bunch, and they really came to believe in each other. And I just haven't seen that sense of belief for a while with this team.
Yeah, since they won a championship. I think that's a great point, Steve. Steve Ashburner is joining us, the senior writer for NBA.com on the Mercedes-Benz of Bedford hotline. Let me throw this one at you just because I think it's an interesting topic for the NBA right now. We've seen more fights like in the last week than I think we've seen in quite some time, and all kind of headlined by that Rockets-Clippers drama they had where guys trying to sneak into the locker room. Is this? I got to wonder what the league office is thinking about what's going on with these guys and trying to take it to the next level. The Rockets-Clippers thing is interesting because it didn't happen on the floor, and if something bigger would have happened, I mean, you're looking at, you know, police reports and arrests and things like that because it didn't happen on the floor. What's your take on it?
You know, like a lot of people, I found it amusing at first, but I do agree. There's a, once you get beyond the surface of it and how crazy it just must have been there. I mean, I really wish we had TMZ video in the days of smartphones to, you know, to have all angles or a drone at Staples Center that could have, you know, tracked the back hallway or whatever. All right, that's fine. And we all have had our fun with it. But I agree with you. I mean, this is all fragile stuff in these times. And you know, look, I look around the arenas, and I know that a big, you know, part of the ticket buying fan base, you know, is sort of middle America. And the NBA has done a great job of sort of putting the problems of the 70s into the 80s behind it. That was David Stern's number one accomplishment, I consider, that, you know, the whole thing is the league's too black, the league's too this, you know, drug use, whatever it was. And they moved well on from those public relation issues. But I don't know that they couldn't come back in some form. I mean, we live in polarized times. There's so many entertainment options. The league is riding high right now. But the last thing it needs is a sense that, you know, these guys are unruly to the point of, you know, wanting to have, you know, rumbles under the stands, you know, right after a game. I don't know what it is. I mean, a lot of people are, you know, I'll just use the word us. A lot of us are running pretty raw on emotions for whatever the reasons are. I mean, you know, the political backdrop of the country and, you know, all sorts of things. And, you know, it's just, I don't know how we tackle it macro and from the NBA standpoint. I think the only thing they can do is just reel it in and have discipline and remind people of what they all have at stake financially and reputationally, in a micro sense. It's just, you know, sometimes it's a pendulum too, isn't it, guys, where, yeah. Sometimes you think, oh, these guys, look, they want to play on the same team. They don't want to beat each other, you know, on the court. They want to just gang up and
all pals
and bully other teams. Well, that's not cool. That's too much fraternity and not enough competition. And then they want to, you know, go start a fight or something. And that's too much competition and not enough fraternity for guys that are, you know, that are professionals and you know, have fans who look up to them or follow their exploits. And so it's back and forth between, you know, which do you prefer and how do you keep things closer to the middle? But I don't know. I don't know that I have any answers. I see this talk about, you know, players against referees and there's not enough communication and, boy, there's not much respect there. And do the players and the refs in 2018 think that they've invented rancor within, you know, between them? I mean, referees and players are not supposed to get along, you know, and it's supposed to be chippy and fractious and all these things. And it was when Earl Strom was refereeing and Mendy Rudolph. And, you know, so these all aren't overnight created problems. And so I'm just a little surprised that now this is a burning issue that the refs, you know, have to show more respect for the players. It's like referees are authority figures. They don't care who wins or loses if they're doing their jobs right. Players are passionate and emotional, and they don't get to call their own fouls, and they have to sort of abide by the way the game is adjudicated. And I don't know that you can really bridge that gap and have the players sort of feel good about, you know, how they're viewed in the referee's eyes. It's just, I don't know. There's a whole lot of emotion that's swirling about this game, and I don't know how to sort of get it all in one tidy little bag.
Steve Ashburner joining us from NBA.com. Steve, last thing. Celtics, after two losses, went nuts and had their great winning streak. looked terrific. Then the Cavs won 18 out of 19. They looked terrific. Celtics took a step back. Through the whole thing, the Toronto Raptors have been steadily improving and playing good ball. Who do you like in the East as it stands right now to come out and get to the finals?
Well, you know, I haven't seen enough negative to come off the Cavaliers. I mean, I still think if you have LeBron James and he's been to seven straight finals, you've got to think that the odds favor him going to his eighth before any of these other guys, you know, get to either their first period or their first in a new situation like Kyrie. But I don't think the gap is as big as it was. I don't think that the Cavaliers are the favorites that they were, both from some of the issues that we talked about at the beginning with them and the fact that those issues, I think, have emboldened the competition in the East. I mean, Toronto's got to show that they can do it before you really believe they can do it, because they've been good before. But the way that they have sort of enhanced their offense and they're not as reliant on just their two, you know, the backcourt guys, Lowry and DeRozan, I think that that's a very good sign. There's a freshness about that team, and maybe, you know, with enough confidence and an early success against Cleveland in a series, you know, maybe they could pull something off like that. Boston, you know, is outstanding. I just don't think without Gordon Hayward that we'll really see them to their full potential. I'm glad that they've been able to make this season as successful as they have. I was there on opening night when I just thought, oh, boy, the Celtics are done. But they'll have a success if they can reach a conference championship, never mind, you know, advance to the finals this year without their full set. And after that, I mean, Washington to me is unreliable and unimpressive, and Milwaukee, a team I see quite often, you know, really hasn't seized what's an important transition year this year, and you know, the fact that Giannis Antetokounmpo needs to win a playoff series eventually here. So I still think Cleveland's my team out of the East. I just would feel better about it if I thought that they had more answers for the Warriors.
Steve, thank you so much. We always appreciate your time. And, of course, if you want to hit him on Twitter, at ASCHNBA. Thanks, Steve.
Outstanding.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Steve.
We'll talk to you soon.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.